Blog Talk Radio.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is working to help keep you and your community safe from the threat of novel or new coronavirus. Take the following everyday steps to help avoid the spread of all respiratory viruses. Wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Cover your cough or sneeze with a tissue. Throw the tissue away and then wash your hands. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects or surfaces, such as remote controls and doorknobs. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. And stay home if you are sick. Call your healthcare provider if you develop fever, cough, or difficulty breathing. For more tips, visit cdc.gov.
Good morning, and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. I'm your host, Joy Keyes. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. You can follow me on Twitter, at Joy Keyes. Also, check me out on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes, and on Instagram, Saturdays with Joy Keyes. I'd love to hear from you. If you have any questions or comments, you can email me at SaturdaysWithJoyKeyes@hotmail.com. And guess what? Now we are on iHeartRadio. So you got iHeartRadio, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and here at Blog Talk Radio. So wherever you happen to be listening, jamming to your music, you can switch over to a podcast. Hopefully mine. And I would encourage you to rate the podcast as well as leave any comments there. We love to hear from you guys. And also, I do a lot of giveaways, so you want to follow on social media. Well, today is World Hypertension Day. Now, hypertension is what? Another name for high blood pressure. And there are a lot of us in the African American community who are dealing with high blood pressure. Some of us don't even know it, because it has a lot of sneaky things about it. But I have a specialist today. He's a board-certified internal medicine with subspecialties in cardiovascular diseases, interventional cardiology, and nuclear cardiology. In addition to his Kansas City Super Doctor's Honor, Dr. Lawrence was named the 2011 National Physician of the Year by the American Heart Association. He earned his medical degree from Harvard, and he is also the chief of cardiology at Research Medical Center. Good morning, Dr. Lawrence. How are you?
Doing well. Good morning. How are you, Joy?
Oh, I'm trying to keep my blood pressure down. You know, that's my main thing, especially now, you know, I'm reading all the stuff on hypertension. I'm like, did I do that? Oh, man, I didn't walk enough this week. I definitely did not walk enough this week. I feel like I'm like the principal's office, and I'm like, no, doctor, I only walked 3 days this week. Oh, my goodness. But thank you.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
So let me talk to you about this disease. Why is it affecting African Americans more, or people of color more, than other ethnicities?
First of all, let me, again, thank you for having me here. Thank you for supporting the American Heart Association, and thank you for supporting World Hypertension Day. You know, high blood pressure is a very common problem. Just to step back just a little bit, back in 2017, we sort of redefined what high blood pressure is. And for people who don't know, when the heart contracts, it causes pressures in the arteries of the body to go up. And the top number is called systolic blood pressure. And when that systolic blood pressure gets to be consistently greater than 129 millimeters of mercury, it increases your risk of developing heart disease, stroke, and kidney disease. And there are different stages of hypertension. But let's say that for the most part, we want to consistently keep our blood pressure less than 130 millimeters of mercury. Hypertension is incredibly common. 60% of African American men and women have high blood pressure. And point of fact, if you're 45 years of age, there's a greater than 90% chance that at some point you're going to develop high blood pressure. And it's 90% in African Americans, and it's about 85% in white Americans. The reason it's higher in African Americans is multifactorial. It has mostly to do with sort of the so-called social determinants of health,
mm-hmm.
Which is to say that there are things that go on in our life. That hypertension is just a barometer of what's going on in your life. It's a barometer of your weight. It's a barometer of your eating habits. It's a barometer of how much money you make. I mean, there are a lot of things that influence African Americans in such a way that we have higher rates of high blood pressure than folks of other ethnicity. And it's not all just genetic based. It has a lot to do with your environment.
Now, do you think men or women have higher rates of high blood pressure, and why?
Well, it varies at different ages. Earlier on, over time, for both men and women, hypertension, the chance of having hypertension increases as you age. At younger ages, the rates of hypertension tend to be higher for women, and that's probably true throughout the age range. But it also depends upon beyond gender. It depends upon other social economic factors as well.
Now, just there's some people joining on the line, and you just mentioned about systolic, diastolic. What's the difference? What does that mean? What's happening with the blood when it's systolic versus diastolic?
Well, you can imagine the heart contracts, and when it contracts, it increases the pressure in the walls of the arteries. And then when the heart relaxes, that blood pressure, the pressure along the walls will decrease. And the lowest number before the heart contracts again is called the diastolic pressure. The highest number is called the systolic pressure. In managing hypertension, primarily we're concerned about systolic blood pressure. Most of the guidelines are written focused on systolic blood pressure, focused on that top number.
So now you mentioned it had to be below 129. I heard about there's like pre-high blood pressure and then there's actual blood pressure. What are those ranges?
Well, that was sort of part of the redefinition that happened in 2017. In point of fact, at every blood pressure almost, there's incremental increased risk of developing heart disease. It becomes significant once blood pressure gets above 120 millimeters of mercury. So what we redefined hypertension to be is a systolic blood pressure. When the systolic blood pressure is between 120 and 129, that's considered elevated blood pressure. When the blood pressure is between 130 and 139, that's considered stage 1 blood pressure. When blood pressure is greater than 140 millimeters of mercury consistently, then that's considered stage 2 hypertension. And there are different implications for treatment based upon what that blood pressure is on average.
Now, is there some kind of food? I mean, I've heard things about different kinds of herbs people might take, things people, you know, cod liver oil and, you know, cinnamon, turmeric, all these. Are those things safe? I mean, is there any facts to any of those, like, herbal remedies?
I don't know. I don't think anybody knows for certain because there have not been much in the way of, you know, double-blind controlled trials of the type that we use in science to gather to guide our treatment approach. Certainly, we know that what you put in your mouth can certainly impact your blood pressure, and one of the most important things is the amount of sodium or salt that you take in. And we generally recommend that you take in less than 1,500 milligrams of sodium a day
to avoid developing
high blood pressure and to treat it. Excuse me.
That's okay. So we should be looking at the backs of boxes and things like that to see, because there's some things that have salt. We don't even realize they might have salt and be eating them on a regular basis. In terms of medicines, you mentioned there were different things that would be done if somebody was like the 120 to 129 versus the 130 to 140. What is the first course of action? I mean, would you tell somebody to go exercise first before they do medicine, or it just has to be medicine right off the bat?
Well, the first thing you have to do, and it managing high blood pressure is to accurately determine whether someone has high blood pressure. So how you measure blood pressure is incredibly important. It's important that it's measured with a automated blood pressure device that is accurate and that's validated. And many of the devices that people use, even in the offices, are not validated, are not accurate. Most of the wrist cuff devices that people use are not accurate. There's a particular way, particular methodology you use when you measure blood pressure. You need to make certain that someone's sitting in a chair, that their blood pressure cuff fits, that you wait 5 minutes before you actually check the blood pressure, or recognizing that things such as anxiety can falsely elevate your blood pressure, and that's that so-called white coat phenomenon where people go to the doctor and their blood pressure automatically goes up 10 millimeters of mercury. They go home and walk out of the office, it goes down, and that becomes a challenge to making a diagnosis. But the foundation for the management of hypertension at any stage are the lifestyle changes that are important to lowering blood pressure change. And those lifestyle changes include diet and exercise. We know that with changing the amount of salt alone that you take into your diet, you can decrease blood pressure by as much as 8 millimeters of mercury. There is a specific diet, for instance, called the DASH diet, which was specifically developed to help lower blood pressure. Well, people on the DASH diet can lower their blood pressure as much as 15 millimeters of mercury. Cutting back on the consumption of alcohol can lower blood pressure as much as 5 millimeters of mercury. And then
oh, my God. You mean I can't have that glass of wine at night? I can't have the glass. I thought they said red wine was good or something for, like, circulation or something.
You can have the first one, but after that third or fourth, you know, you probably may be feeling good, but it's probably not necessarily helping your blood pressure.
Okay. So three or four, that's right. We could have stopped that right there.
The recommendation for women is one a day. For men, it's about two glasses of alcohol a day.
Okay. Is that because of body weight or size? Is that what that is?
Most likely.
Now, why is it called the silent killer?
It's called the silent killer because you can't tell whether or not your blood pressure is elevated just by how you feel. The point at which you actually have symptoms related to high blood pressure is typically a point at which you have really life-threatening hypertension. If you have headaches, and those become so-called hypertensive emergencies. But for the most part, if your blood pressure is under 170 or so millimeters of mercury, there's no way that you're going to typically be symptomatic. And that's why it's called the silent killer. And it's the silent killer until it's not so silent and you have a stroke or you have a heart attack or you develop renal disease. So I actually don't like that term so much because it sort of underrepresents the amount of damage that elevated blood pressure can do to a person over time.
Now, I understand it can also affect your eyesight. How is that connected with high blood pressure?
Well, it's not so directly. It's not, loss of vision is not a major problem with hypertension, but certainly if you have a stroke related to hypertension, stroke can manifest itself as loss of sight. Certainly, hypertension can narrow the arteries of any organ or structure in the body, but loss of sight is not a typical manifestation of high blood pressure.
Now, you mentioned headaches. So what if somebody's just really under stress at work and, you know, they all of a sudden have this really bad headache? Should they be worried that they have high blood pressure, or is that just a headache? How would they know they should call the doctor?
Check your blood pressure.
In the end,
that's how you know if you need to check your blood pressure. That's the short answer. A lot of things cause hypertension, and then on the other hand, if you have a headache from whatever cause, that stress of of pain can lead to an elevation of your blood pressure. So you want to know what your blood pressure is, why you have a headache, but more equally importantly, you want to know what your blood pressure is in between the stress of a migraine or whatever else may be causing that elevated blood pressure.
I saw on the American Heart Association's website, they actually have a lot of good things and resources, but one of the things I saw was like a blood pressure tracker so that somebody could kind of write down on a regular basis what their blood pressure is over time. Do you think that's a good idea? And then
they
could share it? Okay.
Yeah, blood pressure is not a constant. I mean, blood pressure, again, it's a barometer of what's going on in your life. So when you exercise, for instance, your blood pressure goes up. When you go to sleep, your blood pressure will go down. So the challenge is knowing what blood pressure actually represents this person's risk of developing heart disease or kidney disease or stroke. And we know that if you measure blood pressure twice in the morning, take an average, twice in the evening, take an average, and you do that over 3 days and you take that average, that is really the best representation of what your blood pressure is and the blood pressure that defines your risk of developing complications from elevated blood pressure. So it's really taking an average over several days that gives you the best indication of whether you have hypertension and what your risks are. And we actually advocate this self-measured home blood pressure monitoring as the best way to accurately define someone's risk for developing complications of hypertension and defining whether they have hypertension.
Now, say I go to the doctor, I have high blood pressure, or I was told, and they give me some medicine. So I've been taking that, say, for, 3 months, maybe 6 months, and I've been feeling really good, and my numbers have been looking great. Should I just stop taking my medicine?
No, don't do that.
Okay.
Hypertension can be cured. Hypertension is not cured by taking medications. Hypertension is cured by making the lifestyle changes that we talked about earlier over long periods of time. So when you take medications, it lowers your blood pressure, it lowers your risk of developing complications from hypertension, but it does not cure you of hypertension. That's why you have to combine the lifestyle changes with medications to effectively manage blood pressure, and it's those lifestyle changes that you make over time that can actually lead to your hypertension going away. If you lose enough weight, you change your diet, et cetera.
Now, there's the different types of medicines. Now, what's a statin? What does that do as opposed to, say, the hydrochlorothiazide?
Yeah, so statins are used to treat cholesterol. So that's working
on a
different
risk factor. Okay, so that's
cholesterol. Risk factor. So there are different types of blood pressure medicines like diuretics, and hydrochlorothiazide is a type of a diuretic that helps to treat hypertension. There's a group of medications called inhibitors that are used to treat hypertension, angiotensin receptor blockers, and another class called calcium. So there are multiple classes of medications that act via different mechanisms to lower blood pressure. All these medications have potential side effects, and so as we begin to treat hypertension, it's important that we find medications that not only effectively lower blood pressure, but they do so without producing side effects. And because we have so many to choose from, we're able to effectively do that in most people, especially when we combine it with those lifestyle changes that are foundational to the management of hypertension.
Now, I've heard some people taking two types at the same time. Why would a doctor do that combo, like having more than one?
They're medications that work. It's a word called synergistically. They work. They're more effective together than they are when used singularly. And we know that for most patients, it takes 3 to 4 medications to get their blood pressure under control. And that's why we even have combination medicines, medications that might include an ACE inhibitor and a thiazide diuretic in one. because usually one medication is not enough. And if you're more likely to get complications from one medication if you raise it to its maximum dose than if you use a low dose of one medication and a low dose of a second medication together to lower blood pressure. So we frequently choose or need to use combinations of medications. The good news is that typically we can take, even if you need multiple medications, they can be taken once a day at the same time. So it's not like you have to remember that second or third dose during the day. So, and that becomes our goal, to treat the goal with as little in the way of side effects as we can.
Now, is there a connection between high blood pressure and strokes? I've heard that there's some type of connection there.
Absolutely. The hypertension is the major risk factor for stroke, especially in African Americans, and it's one of the most devastating complications of hypertension. And that's why I don't like the term silent killer, because there is nothing silent about a stroke.
Right, and there's when you have a stroke that you need to immediately try to get attention and not wait, because time is of the essence, right?
Yes, yeah. Stroke is a medical emergency. There are things that we can effectively do to prevent a stroke from progressing or to reverse a stroke, but it is time dependent. So if you develop a speech problem, garbled speech or confusion, if all of a sudden you're weak in one of your extremities, you have a severe headache, all of those things are indications of a possible stroke. And you know, time is tissue, and you need to get to the emergency room as quickly as possible. You should know where the real stroke centers are in your community. What you don't want to do is go to an urgent care center when you think you're having a stroke, because all that does is delay your care. You want to go to a hospital that has a stroke center of excellence so that you can be treated quickly and effectively. But most importantly, you do want to go to the nearest center for care if you think you have symptoms attributable to a stroke.
Now, an interesting thing, I was on the CDC's website, and it was showing what parts of the country have higher blood pressure than most. And over here, it's like in the east and middle part of the country, we have like super high blood pressure. And the people on the west side, they were like mild. Is that part of that social determinants of health that you were speaking about earlier in the environment?
We have the so-called stroke belt, and you can guess where it is. It's usually where black people are, and it's related to the fact that you have they have higher risk factors for stroke in these communities. But and while hypertension is a major risk factor for stroke, there are other risk factors, some that we can control better than others. For instance, we know that the better educated you are, the less the chance of having a stroke. We know that the more money you make, the less the risk of having a stroke. We know that if you live in a community where there are sidewalks, where you can walk and you can walk safely, there's less of a chance of you having a stroke, or I should say less of a chance of you having hypertension as well as a chance of having a stroke. We know that areas where there are high crime, that leads to higher levels of stress. We know that when you are afraid of violence from a policeman or violence from your neighbors, that leads to stress and leads to increased risk of a hypertension over time. Racism is a risk, and being exposed to racism is a public health problem, and that leads to higher incidence of stroke. So all the things, again, hypertension. Again, hypertension is just a barometer of everything, all the things that influence an individual in their daily life.
Now, I know some people might have just joined. I see a lot of people. I want to see if anybody has a question. You have the last four digits are 5066. Did you have a question for Dr. Lawrence this morning? You have the last digits 5066 in your number? No? Okay. You just want to listen. That's fine. I want you to say one more time, because we have about a couple minutes left. Talk about the systolic versus diastolic again. I just want to get that through to people and what those numbers mean and why they're so important.
Sure, sure. When the heart contracts, it produces a pressure in the arteries of the body, and that peak pressure with contraction of the heart is called the systolic blood pressure, and ideally it should be less than 120 millimeters of mercury. When the heart relaxes just before it contracts again, the arteries are at a certain pressure, and that's called the diastolic pressure. And so it's that systolic pressure over the diastolic pressure that defines your blood pressure to the heart contraction cycle. And we use the systolic blood pressure for the most part to guide our management of high blood pressure.
And also I want to mention, I asked the doctor earlier, if I started taking medicine for a couple of months or 6 months or whatever, and I'm feeling good and my numbers have been stable, I should not stop taking my medicine. So I'm not a doctor. He is. He said it. Do not stop taking your medicine just because you are feeling better temporarily. That's something I believe you should speak with your, you know, PCP or your doctor about on how to do that. But and also that it is something that can be cured with lifestyle changes, and that's what he's saying is the key. It's over time, our lifestyle changes. Now, do you think this is real crazy? I don't know if you know this answer. Is weightlifting better than cardio in terms of getting our blood pressure down, or do we need both?
It's aerobic exercise that is the type of exercise that leads to heart healthy existence, and so it's really the walking and the running. If you can stand running anymore, I can't. That makes a difference. It's the aerobic exercise rather than weightlifting per se that impacts our health. The problem with weightlifting is that it's hard to explain, but there's something called afterload. When you lift weights over time, it makes the heart has to actually work harder in a way that's not necessarily healthy. But that's to say that weightlifting has other benefits. So as with anything, when you're talking only about heart health, it's certainly a balance between aerobic exercise and other types of exercise such as weightlifting that are incredibly important. But certainly lifting weights at a moderate level over time is important, especially as you get a little bit older. That weight bearing can be healthy for bones, for instance. So it's really a combination, as is the case with most things in life.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Dr. Lawrence, for coming on the show this morning. And I want to thank the American Heart Association for connecting us.
Yeah, well, thank you. It's been a real pleasure. In this time of COVID, we have come to understand that patients who have hypertension, who have COPD, who smoke, who have diabetes, put you at increased risk of having more severe complications related to COVID. So treat your hypertension, treat your risk factors, aerobic exercise, watch your diet, and most importantly, wear your mask. And then the last thing, vote.
All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Lawrence, for coming on today. You have a great weekend, okay?
My pleasure. Thank you so much, Joy.
Okay, bye-bye. Thank you, everybody, for tuning into the show. You can follow me at Joy Keys on Twitter, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys on Facebook, and Saturdays with Joy Keys on Instagram. I'll be giving away some books. I have a lot of stuff. I still have some CDs and music, so check out the social media. You can follow the show on Spotify, Stitcher, now iHeartRadio, here at Blog Talk Radio, and iTunes. Have a wonderful weekend.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is working to help keep you and your community safe from the threat of novel or new coronavirus. Take the following everyday steps to help avoid the spread of all respiratory viruses. Wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Cover your cough or sneeze with a tissue. Throw the tissue away and then wash your hands. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects or surfaces, such as remote controls and doorknobs. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. And stay home if you are sick. Call your healthcare provider if you develop fever, cough, or difficulty breathing. For more tips, visit cdc.gov.